Blog Talk Radio.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, some of us will probably catch it on TV with chicken hanging from our mouths. You'll know it's revolution because there won't be no commercial. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution comes.
Preacher pimps are gonna split the scene with the communion wine stuck in their back pockets. Faggots won't be so funny then, and all the junkies will quit their nod and wake up when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, transit cops will be crushed by the trains after losing their guns, and blood will run through the streets of Harlem, drowning anything without substance when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes. I hope pearly white teeth fall out of the mouths that speak of revolution without reference. The course of revolution is 360 degrees. Understand the cycle that never ends. Understand the beginning to be the end. And nothing is in between but space and time that I make or you make to relate or not to relate to the world outside my mind, your mind. Speak not of revolution until you are willing to eat rats to survive. When the revolution comes.
When the revolution
comes. When the revolution comes, guns and rifles will be taking the place of poems and essays. Black cultural centers will be forts supplying the revolutionaries with food and arms when the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, white death will fall off the walls of museums and churches, breaking the lie that enslaved our mothers. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jesus Christ is going to be standing on the corner of Lenox Avenue and 125th Street, trying to catch the first gypsy cab out of Harlem. When the revolution comes. When the revolution comes, Jew merchants will give away monster balls and gefilte fish to anyone they see with an afro. Frank Shippen will give away the Apollo to the first person he sees wearing a blue dashiki. When the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
afros gonna be trying to straighten their heads, and straighten heads gonna be trying to wear afros. When the revolution comes, when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes,
when the revolution comes. But until then, you know, and I know, niggas will party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party and bullshit and party. Some might even die before the revolution comes.
Black power, black power, black power, and more black power to my people. It's your brother, soldier in arms. And comrade in battle, Sean Saddam Kweli, I'm happy to be able to broadcast live once again to you from right here in the hells and smells of North America. And as always, this is a privilege, this is a joy, it's an esteemed honor to be able to talk to my sisters, my brothers, and some others from this bold platform, this revolutionary radio broadcast, Black Power Radio. That's the official broadcast, the new Black Panther Party for Self-Defense. And you know how we do every Monday night. We have to come bold, unrelenting, unflinching, uncompromising with our enemies. Completely raw, completely uncut, unfiltered, undiluted, untampered with, and unmixed in any form. And so we welcome you out. We want to, if it's your first time listening, give you a shout out and a thanks for listening. If it's your second time listening or third time, or if you are a long time listener for these many years that we have been on the air, we are certainly thankful for your presence tonight, as we'll be talking about the hidden hand behind the rise of black people, African people, the hills of North America, African people in the diaspora, African people of the continent of Africa, the hidden hand behind our rise. We'll talk about that tonight with some great, great black men who I'm honored to know and honored to soldier with, some wonderful educators who are out there putting their lives on the line for the proper education of our, and if you've read the fifth point in our new Black Panther program, we always talk to you about an education, a proper education, that teaches the true nature of this devilish and decadent American society, a true education that teaches you your history and our sister's history and what our role should be in this present day, what we should be doing in this present day society. And so we are going to be hearing from our great educator, Professor James Small, bodyguard, we'll be hearing from him and his travels and what he has going on. I hope that you all can hear me. We'll be hearing from him, and we will be talking to him, and we will be talking to the great, great Professor Leonard Jeffries. We'll be talking to him live tonight on Black Power Radio. Black Power Radio, the great so-called small hat Jew crusher, talking about Leonard Jeffries. We will also be hearing from that great prince of Pan-Africanism, that great educator who is crisscrossing not only the country but crisscrossing the world, talking about our brother and friend and soldier and that relative of that great abolitionist, Frederick Douglass. We're talking about Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson. It's all tonight on this show right now, live. And as I say, you better tell a neighbor and tell a friend. You better grab your comrades and grab your family and get close to your radio listening dial. Get close to your telephone. Get close to your computer. Put your earbuds in your ear and plug in heavy. Because tonight you're talking about some real warriors on the line that's going to open your eyes and tell you what time it is. We're going to also hear from our national chairman, a black man who's been doing this work for many years and is no ways tired of giving our oppressors and open enemies hell from the cradle to the grave. He's no ways tired of organizing our people and pushing our people towards self-determination. We're talking about a black man who is standing up in the hells and smells of North America, organizing some of the most boldest, courageous black men and women to ever be organized in the hells and smells of North America since our OG comrades and veterans in the black liberation struggle. He's organizing this new Black Panther Party for self-determination, Kujichagulia, for cooperative economics, for land development. He's organizing this new Black Panther Party for territory of our own, organizing this new Black Panther Party to challenge racist, brute, fuck, wild boys and dope dealers put in the community by the procurer of the CIA and the underhanded elements in the U.S. government. I'm talking about our national chairman, Minister Hashim Nzinga. He's going to come on as well and introduce our first guest. You better buckle your safety belt, because you know this ain't no punk show. And if you a little sissified, or if you a little punctified, or if you a little pasteurized or homogenized, tonight you're going to be turned into a raw, pure mix of black power. I open this show giving thanks to the God of our forefathers and foremothers who answers to many different names. I bear witness, regardless of land, label, or language, there is but one God, and we give thanks to that God and the goddess. As we know, without that feminine, you don't have proper balance. There is no God without the goddess. So we give thanks, whatever name that you use, whether you say Elohim, or whether you say Yemenyah, or whether you say Obachala, or whether you say Oshun, or Ogun, or Asai, or Aset, or whether you say Akhenaten, which is our national chairman's middle name, Akhenaten, or whether you say Amen or Amen-Ra, whether you say Lord God Almighty, or whether you say Jehovah, or whether you say Yemenyah, or whether you just stick one finger up in the air and give praise to the one God, or whether you say Allah, or Allah Satana wa Ta'ala, or whatever you say in your language, we say we with you, black man and black woman. And we ain't set you, but we give praise to the same divine, creative, regenerative force in the world. And we're thankful for our ancestors, the mothers and fathers of civilization. Don't get it twisted. Whenever any scientist or any anthropologist wants to know who was the first or what started this whole, well, who were the first in the universe, they go right to that black woman. They go right to the black woman and into the marrow and into the bone of the black man. Okay? And so they already know that you are the first people and that we are the first people. So we have to give thanks to the first people who have ever dwelled on the face of the planet Earth. When you're talking about human beings and you say human, when you slow that down and say human or human being, you're talking about a man or a woman with Q or with melanin and with content. And so we know that we are the original people. We are the mothers and fathers of civilization. We are the builders of civilization. We are the fathers and mothers of mathematics and science and alchemy and chemistry. We are the first and the last, the Alpha and Omega, the beginning and the end, if there's an end. So we give thanks to our ancestors, and we give thanks to those that when our people were taken on a westerly course by a slave trader named Sir John Hawkins in the years sometime around 1555, and all of those who were commissioned by the Queen of England and all them slave pirate ships that they sent, and they came to the shores of Africa and made a speech to our people to get our people to sell each other out like we're doing today. We're thankful that our ancestors, unpopular to popular belief, fought back and resisted the slave traders and fought back and resisted the slave catchers. We're thankful to our people who fought from the slave ship down to the Cape, down to the coast here in the hells of North America. We're thankful for all the resistance elements that fought from the Deacons of Defense on down to the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, Prophet Noble Drew Ali. Thankful to the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Nation of Islam. We're thankful to the Black Panther Party, Lowndes County, Alabama, Kwame Ture, formerly Stokely Carmichael. We're thankful to the Black Panther Party in the Northern California chapter, and those comrades, Black Panther Party, Huey P. Newton, Bobby Seale, and that original cadre that started in Oakland, California, and spread the country. We're thankful to the Black Liberation Army that when COINTELPRO hit and they divided the Black Liberation Movement, we're thankful that soldiers went underground and fought back and resisted the beast. Thankful to Minister Malcolm X, who championed black nationalism and put black nationalism and black power back on the table before many took it off. We're thankful for these great ones who have come amongst us. But if we live to be 1,000, or if we don't quite make the ripe old age of 1,000 and we just make it to the age of Methuselah, which is 969 years. We are thankful for our upstart and our beginnings, our humble beginnings in Dallas, Texas, on the year 1989, when the police departments, the pig department assassinated that great revolutionary minister and Dr. Huey P. Newton, knowing that he had already talked about plans to clean himself up, plans to get himself together, plans to pull himself back in the upright position. They assassinated him there on the streets of Oakland, California, in an alleged drug deal going wrong. We'll break that down one day, how we know that's not true. Thankful that even though his physical body was assassinated, his spirit, his will, his work, and his wisdom continued on, where he taught you that the youth would inherit the revolution. And so we're thankful that the young organizers in Dallas, Texas, organized on his spirit to begin to pick up again where the soldiers left off, a movement that was bombarded and infiltrated and destroyed at the hands of J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI and COINTELPRO, the counterintelligence program of the United States government under the direction of Hoover and the FBI. We're thankful that some men and some women had the courage to start the movement over again and recollect themselves and rededicate themselves and recalibrate themselves, knowing that our people are still under assault. Our people were still dying. Our people were still miseducated. Our people were not yet free. Our people did not have power. Our people did not have self-determination. Our people could not define their own destiny, their own community. Our people did not have full employment. They didn't have dignity, and they were still begging the white man for that which they could unite and do for themselves. We're thankful for Brother Aaron Michaels and those who started in Dallas, Texas, and we're thankful for a beautiful, bold, bald-headed black man, 100% black man, unrelenting, unflinching, and unyielding with this enemy who taught you and I that his purpose was to give the devil hell from the cradle to the grave, to organize our people into a black liberation army that would stand above the ground and, as he say, face this cracker in the streets, eye to eye and nose to nose. We're thankful for the black power general, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad, who was our former national chairman, who spread this mission into the hearts of the youth through the Million Youth March and through maneuvers all across the country and the world, and put the cry of black power back on the map and in the hearts of a modern generation. And even though we lost him physically in the year 2001, he had prepared many students and had taught many of us how to stand in his absence and carry on the fight, knowing that this fight is not about any personality. This fight is not about the personality of Sean Saddam. This fight is not about the personality of Minister Hashim Nzinga. This fight is not about the personality of Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz or Umar Johnson or any of us. This fight is about the resurrection of black men and black women, Africans in the hills of North America. And so when a soldier falls in battle, no matter what the consequences or the circumstances, when a soldier falls in battle, it is incumbent upon the rest of the soldiers looking to pick up the torch and carry the torch and continue to fight in a revolutionary way. And so many students were there, but a black man was able to stand and carry that torch as national chairman. He was able to continue to fight and push, even though many were afraid to do it and many could not do it. We're talking about a Howard University-trained law student who put his practice to the side and put his professionalism to the side, put down his lofty position. He could have just been a lofty attorney and sat around and been a Bugetto somewhere. But he is a revolutionary soldier, and he knew he had a duty. So he answered the call to destiny, and he began to hear the voice of the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad in his head saying, push on and continue on. People need you. Your people need you, and your people are still oppressed, and we ain't free yet. As he would say, God damn it, get up and fight. And so we're thankful to the Attorney General and the Attorney at War, the five-star general who served as our national chairman from all the way from 2001 into just last year of 2013. Talking about the Attorney General, Attorney at War, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we're thankful for another brother who is not slack in the least and is not backed down in the least, another student of the Black Power General. These students just keep on coming. We in here. A student who crisscrossed the country with the Black Power General, who was shot in Riverside, California with the Honorable Dr. Khalid Abdul Muhammad. Took bullets, and also, as in self-defense, given some bullets. In self-defense, carried two pistols while the Honorable Khalid Muhammad had his shotgun. I'm talking about a black man who went a cold-blooded, no-good bastard like George Zimmerman. Killed our young warrior, Trayvon Martin. Killed the black nation's young son, Trayvon Martin. Killed Sister Sabrina and Brother Chase's son right there in the rain. This black man, along with the revolutionaries in the black community, organized to put that legal reward out for the capture of George Zimmerman. And we're thankful for that kind of strength and that kind of example. That's the kind of leadership that you got in a chairman, a national chairman Minister Hashim Nzinga. I'm talking about it's on, family. The struggle continues. Salute and respects to my comrades in Africa. Salute and respects to my comrades in England. Respect to my comrades there in Brazil. Respect to our comrades in Canada. Respect to all of our international family that's listening tonight. And salute and respect to everybody who is listening here in the hells and smells of North America and South America. We're talking to the world tonight on Black Power Radio. What are we talking about? We're talking about the liberation and rise of a people who have suffered much, a miseducated people who are still abused by the two-party sham system of the Democratic and Republic system. I'm here to say, and the new Black Panther Party is here to say, that America is not a democracy. America is a plutocracy. America is run by just a few of the wealthy. It ain't run by the people. And so we picked the battle cry up of power to the people, and it's black power for black people. You need some power, black man and black woman, and that's what we're after tonight. I'm not even going to go into it. I'm going to wait for the elders and the comrades to come on and talk to you about the power that you need and what we must do to unite amongst ourselves to take off the mental shackles from our minds and from the shackles from off of our behinds. But I do want to say that you all better get ready. You better get ready because at the end of March, next month, March the 28th through the 30th, we're coming hardcore with our national summit. We're coming hardcore right black to you once again with that new Black Panther National Summit. And I know that many of you have been questions about how can you get involved with the National Summit. Can you be a part of the National Summit? What's going to happen with our National Summit? Well, I'm here to tell you, we're going to touch every subject that we can possibly touch from A to B. We're going to be there with billionaire Mike Roberts and our National Minister of Economics and Development, Brother Michael Taylor. We're going to be there talking about serious economics and institution building. We're going to talk about building communal schools, and Dr. Umar Johnson, and all, he's on that mission too, building community schools and building our own private institutions that ain't teach you that colonial stuff, that ain't teach you that slave stuff, that ain't teach you that George Washington never told a lie. We're talking about a real history of our greatness, our great ones like Imhotep, who was the first to do the open heart surgery, the first to go intravenously, the first to clean out the insides and all that he did, how he has temples and what they call pyramids built in his name. We're getting you the real information in our schools. We're also going to be talking about self-defense. We're going to be training. We're going to be talking about how to protect yourself from invasion, how to protect yourself from being carjacked, how to protect yourself when you in your day-to-day life. We're going to be talking about what to do with this criminal justice system, as we saw, as I just talked about. George Zimmerman, for example, walked when the evidence was suppressed, and we saw how young Trayvon was minding his business, and he was innocent, just going to the store, but an American justice system will let a George Zimmerman off, but will try its best to sentence a Marissa Alexander, or to try its best to run off who killed Brother Jordan Davis down there in Jacksonville, Florida, and made Michael Dunn face the harshest of penalty down there for killing Brother Jordan Davis. 9 shots fired, and Jordan Davis wasn't doing anything but with his friends and just playing his music, you no good bastard. I'm telling you, we're talking about a national summit that's going to run the gambit. We're also going to do what we must do, which is pay tribute to our former national chairman and general, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. We're going to have the National Conference of Black Mayors in the House. There is so much that we are going to be doing. Brothers and sisters, you will find your way to this national summit and find out how you can be a part of that. Okay, and so we'll let you know, because everything is not going to be open to the public, but the pieces that are open to the public, you're going to want to be for that. And the new Black Panther Party, you must be at everything. You must be there from sun up to sundown. And by the time that we finish from our national summit, as you hear from us going into April, which is in that next few days, you're going to see a brand new, as our national chairman say, a new Black Panther Party. And so I believe that he's ready, and so I don't want to cut into his time, brothers and sisters. He's going to take us further into the next portions of our radio broadcast. You all sit tight and welcome our national chairman and five-star general, Minister Hashim Nsingha. Black Power, sir. Welcome to the radio show.
Black Power, Brother Sean. It's so every time, it's so good to hear your voice screaming across these radio waves. And I'm telling you, it's absolutely a conclusion and yet a beginning. And the reason we say a conclusion and yet a beginning is when we start doing Black Power Radio, we put a conclusion to the miseducation, and we start a beginning to the education. Black Power, Brother Sean, how are you?
Black Power, Brother Chairman, I'm doing good. How are you tonight, sir?
Well, I'm excited because it's just something about this month of February, and our history goes way back to Brother Frederick Douglass, which we would touch his DNA in a couple of minutes, as our guests, as our listening audience know, the Black Power Radio listeners. I just want to always start off by saying Black Power to all our listeners, Black Power to all our faithful, ride or die new Black Panther Party members who very seldom get any credit, very seldom get their names mentioned, but they do the work, and they've been doing it for 20-something years, and if nobody else want to salute them, we'll take time to tell them God is saluting them, and God is watching closely, and God is always checkmate that you want to call in the chess game of life. And we just want to shout out to our spiritual advisor and the Black Lawyers for Justice, who is on a plane from Lubbock, Texas, fighting for a brother out in Lubbock, been out in Houston, been a couple more places on his way home, Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz. And we want to thank our Supreme Captain, Brother Akeem, for making sure he got through Texas safe, while our brother and National Defense Minister, Brother DK, had to go down to Houston and get with the rest of the Revolutionary family and find out what's going on down there, which we're about to get an update with another Jasper, Texas mess. But it's just... Man, Khalid Muhammad, man, Khalid Muhammad, the Honorable Dr. Khalid Muhammad, that's all I could say in February, you know, that's all I could say, you know, so much. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad, Savior's Day, February, you know, and then we have to go back to 1926 and holler out that name and let it live. Dr. Carter G. Woodson started Negro History Week and was consistent. And, man, if you start Negro History Week, Brother Sean, in 1926, you could be lynched for just acknowledging that you're a man less known, starting to talk about those great doctors and those great scientists and talking, you know, when he talked about Black History Month, he was talking about Haiti, Jamaica, Nigeria, Senegal, South Africa, Trinidad,
that's right,
Venezuela, Columbus. He wasn't playing around with just America. He was out of Harvard. Back in the 1920s, he was already at Harvard, so he wasn't afraid to mention Haiti. He wasn't afraid to talk about the Black man in America, but he wasn't afraid to talk about the Black man abroad. So when he wrote The Miseducation of the Negro, he was talking about a whole bunch of miseducation for 2,000 years of miseducation. So we just want to give our brother, our big brother, Dr. Carter G. Woodson, a salute, a Black Power salute, for having the courage in 1926 to stick with it in 1976, make it Black History Month. And now us who engage, us who understand, us who are scientists of this now and the educators of this now, we acknowledge it every day every minute, because Black History Month is Black Power. It's a powerful DNA that's in our blood that comes through our phones, comes through our beepers, our texts, our websites, everyday living. And, you know, from such a great past, man, such a great past to be in this month that's so overlooked by many, you know, just to mention the Booker T. Washingtons and bring back up from slavery and mention people like Frederick Douglass and bring back books like on slavery and the Civil War, and then to talk about the message to the Black man, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and then we have to pull out the Ebony Files, and it's just so much. You know, we can get deep and start to pull out Chancellor Williams, the destruction of the African civilization, and we can really start a workshop and a conference right here tonight on this phone and start teaching some real African history. We can get so deep in this thing, man, that they'll unplug us and we'll have to go on top of the rooftop and tell the truth. But I'm just happy tonight to be back on the Black on the air, brother, certified. And I heard you pumping up that Dignity Summit, I call it, and we call it, because we are dignified people, and it's just really, that's what time it is. That's what time it is. It's time for us to understand we have to speak things into existence. And we just want to update what you just updated, that February is a great month for us to celebrate, for us to get in the community, for us to discuss the issues in the community, for us to bring up leadership and gather the youth, and keep our eye on this 50 million Africans here in America and the millions and millions abroad, you know, and put this white man deception and put his prove him wrong on what he teaches about us, and teach for ourselves who we are, and wake up the sleeping giants and educate our genes, and the gene pool gets into a situation where we build this Black nation. So welcome to Black Talk Radio. We're going to take advantage of this wonderful transformer, transmitter in this phone, that while we talking Black History Month, I clicked on that light and thought about Louis Lattimore, who put the filament in this light bulb over my head. And while we're on this phone, we want to give credit to the brother who put the transmitter in the phone, Frederick Jones, and then he went on to make the ice box, the refrigerator. And then we want to just understand that Charles Drew did that blood plasma and changed the world. Daniel Hale Williams did that first heart surgery in Chicago, changed the world. Dr. Ben Carson separating people from the brain as we speak. Man, it's just so much. It's so much we have gave to this world, from the Black Jesus being born in Africa in Bethlehem and raising among us giants like Solomon and David. And man, come on, we can go back there if they want to keep on messing with us. We want to go back there. We might talk about a Michael Jordan here and there, who's a financial genius in the environment of basketball, but freed himself. Now he owns all kind of things. We need to let go of that present ministry he got. But it's just Black History Month, man, Black History Month. And, you know, I think about brothers like we know that's in our circle, like Brother Tim Reed, the movie star, who went out to Virginia, started his own Black Hollywood to tell our story through film, because we know we read the book, How the Jews Created Hollywood. And I remember on Black Talk Radio, we had our big brother, Brother Lou Gossip Jr., if you remember that show, and he was talking when he was playing in Roots, and when he got his Academy Award. Not for Roots, but the movie with Tom Cruise and the planes. And he said after that, they didn't use them no more. Then we went met Monique. She said after she got her Academy Award, they took her away from TV, because some of our brothers and sisters understand, like the great, great actor and Dr. Khaled Queen, Sister Phyllis Stickney, who used to wear them out on that big screen, man, you know. So we're talking about telling our story during Black History Month, oral, through writings, through books, through the different Black history programs all over the United States this month. And I want to just salute all the little brothers and sisters, and I'm talking about our young people, who's putting on Black history programs at their schools And I want to give all the black organizations, African organizations, that right now are in tune and trying to use this moment in time to wake up a couple more of our people, because we can't afford to pay it any longer, Brother Sean, in genocide. Because right. Genocide is self-hatred. Genocide is not acknowledging or knowing who you are. If you don't know who you are, you don't know who your partners are. And you might partner with your 400-year enemy who has put you to sleep. Malcolm said he put Novocaine and you suffer peacefully. We just want to wake up. So we're going to get back on this great, Sean, it's just a, you know, we're at a crossroad, but it's a great crossroad for our listening audience. You all, no matter how young or old, you all get to, if you keep living, you'll get to a crossroad. And as we name the books by Booker T. Washington, Frederick Douglass, Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X, got a book over here by a billionaire friend of ours who's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, Action Has No Season, Strategies and the Secrets to Gaining Wealth and Authority. Mike Roberts,
right.
Senior, our big brother, Sean, out of St. Louis, told me, you know, Hashim, sometimes they think I'm arrogant. But this arrogance, you know, they don't say mm-hmm. Donald Trump is arrogant. They don't say Rockefeller is arrogant. But when a black man say he's a billionaire, they say we arrogant. But that arrogance, he turns to legacy. And he has 11,000 black employees over the United States, 57 companies. And we just going to – we say all of that to say we got all of these books, all of the websites, the Googles, the knowledge now. We got so much power, you know, brother. And we were doing the Million Youth March. I remember the actor Tommy Ford came up on the stage and he said, I got a job from the Martin Show. And what he broke down is his job is to help these youth, man, understand who they are. And so we had a crossroad, but, you know, the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad put something in my bones and yours and many others in our soul. And that was understand that we could read all of these books. We can gain all of this knowledge. We can look at all these videos and these YouTubes. But, Sean, until you went through the fire
mm-hmm.
and hit these streets and been on this front line like we have for 20-some years being attacked on the highest level of the government in this United Snakes of America consistently.
Right.
And then him being able through COINTELPRO that exists in 2014, being able to turn your own against you, and they reference you out of your name and out of place. They insert you and lay you out the wrong way and review you the wrong way and have you viewed before the world the wrong way. They have the ability with all these files and all of these piles of sensationalism through TV and radio and their Jews papers and their Jews rooms, as Dr. Khaled would say, to make us look like we're out of place, like the boots are not needed no more. But everywhere you look in America, they putting somebody in a pair of boots, SWAT teams, Homeland
right.
Security teams. They blowing down doors, knocking down doors, and 90% of the time, illegally. Producing criminals to arrest criminals, to have a sensationalism of criminalism. I was looking at the War Channel and the History Channel, how Bush was over the CIA, and he brought in Noriega. Noriega was his number one CIA spy, and Noriega got to working for George Bush and the CIA, and he got too big for him. Then they started war in his country. Took him out of his presidency, put another president in, and then they came in and did a coup on him. He ran to a church for refuge, and they was messing up his people so bad he turned himself over to them, and they took him to jail. But George Bush didn't go to jail. How can you teach a man to be a crook and he go to jail and you don't go to jail? So we are sitting here understanding on this Black History Month how important it is not only to read, not only to acknowledge Black history, but the one thing, if you're going to talk Black history and you're going to talk Black History Month, the one thing you got to stop right now and write on a piece of paper in front of you and get your piece of paper ready, because in about 20 minutes We're going to bring that strong black brother and that psychologist on. We'll talk about him in a few minutes. But if you ain't going to do nothing else, you owe it to yourself tonight to write number one, February and Black History Month, number one thing you should write is carriage. Carriage. If you're going to talk about Harriet Tubman, she had carriage. Booker T. Washington, carriage. Nat Turner, carriage. Sojourner on the Truth, carriage. When you're going to talk about black history, you are talking about a people that the white man thought he had, but God had his side, and he gave us carriage. Frederick Douglass said, who am I to speak on your 4th of July? Elijah Muhammad wrote the message to the black man. Come on, man. Carriage. These are the slaves that was on the ropes, that was getting burnt at stake. I was talking to a young little Trill from Trill Entertainment, and he said, Brother Hashim, I saw the butler. They just walked up to Dave Bannister and just blew his brains out at the beginning of the movie, brother. I said, Brother, look, that was Dave Bannister, the actor. But many, 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 many skulls lay in these cotton fields with dirt piled up on them with gunshots in the head. So the number one thing is carriage. If it wasn't for the carriage and the goodwill of our brothers and sisters who marched on anyway, we would never had a Shirley Chisholm in 1972 to say, I'm going to run for president and I ain't going to be bought and I ain't going to be bossed and I ain't going to be bought. We would have never had a little brother running around in Harlem up and down the street called Adam Clayton Powell Jr. Getting him pure hell, man. We would have never had a Marcus Messiah Garvey who said Africa for Africa and told us about the red, the black, and the green that we're so proudly waving this month and every month. The black for the people, the red for the blood, and the green for the land. Carriage, man. That blood in that flag is carriage. Carriage. We would have never had Shaka Zulu. We would have never had Nkrumah, Lumumba, Queen Nzinga. We would have never had all the great ones if it wasn't for carriage. So I say to our listeners, as we at the crossroad and as the new Black Panther Party 2014 Dignity Summit, we are people of dignity, much honor, much respect through it all. So I encourage you to get ready for our website that we've been slowly telling you, we're building it up. And in a couple of days, you'll see it go up. And it's going to be an interactive 21st century website. And the first thing you're going to see flashing all over is the new Black Panther Party 2014 Dignity Summit. Coming to you straight up March 28th, that Friday 2014 in Atlanta, Georgia, starting at 5 o'clock. And going on through that Saturday, March 29th, and then cutting it short at about 5 o'clock that Saturday for 6 o'clock for a minute, and not put flowers on a grave, not put dirt on a coffin, not honor one of the spiritual ancestors, but honor a young brother that's still fiery, still on the front line as we speak, our young brother, our young warrior attorney, Malik Zulu Shabazz, founder of the Black Lawyers for Justice, been on the front line for us and you over 25 years. So we're going to honor our frontline general, 12 years over the new Black Panther Party, 7 years rolling as Dr. Khaled Muhammad, national spokesman, national minister of justice. And we're going to have some people who he look up to and he base himself after. Now the mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, the Malcolm X grassroots movement, the attorney, the Black Panther, attorney Chukwue Lumumba out of Jackson, Mississippi, guest note speaker. We're going to have Dr. Leonard Jeffries. We're going to have attorney Khaled Tariq Al-Mansour. You know him. We're going to have warrior woman there coming in with that indigenous spirit. We're going to have Michael V. Roberts there who respects our brother. We're going to have the CEO of Trill Entertainment who's been working with us for years, Mr. Marcus Roach. We're going to have many, many, many people from Howard University and many people from the struggle that will be announced over the next couple of days. And I love the Sunday, March 30th. When we get up Sunday morning, we're going to start it off with the Million Youth March Presents the Future Leaders, and we're going to let the young people have their time, man. Then we're going to go on into reparations, political prisoners. Then we're going to go into the most important thing we can talk about at a summit, unity among black organizations. So, Sean, it's just as we get closer to the top of the hour, you know, and the people who are just tuning in to Black Talk Radio, I'm the National Chief of Staff, Brother Hashim Nzinga, so excited about Black History Month, and we have been talking about our DNA, who we are, and we've been talking mostly about the New Black Panther Party 2014 Dignity Summit that's coming to you March 28th through March 30th, and we're going to have almost 11 sessions working to better our organization, better our foundation of our organization, and we're going to get together as a organization, and we're going to have a session. One is going to be rebuilding the New Black Panther Party and strategies to get better, you know. Then that's session one. Session two, we're going to mobilize the New Black Panther Party, and the main thing in the session two is a new outreach program so we can do more in our communities, more for our people. Session three is going to be developing, or we call it development, of the New Black Panther Party education system. And we're going to have our national minister, Brother James Muhammad, from the University of Huntsville, Alabama, a professor of 20-something years, Dr. Jacob Savage, many, many more. If I start naming all these people, Sean, you can name them later, but I'm trying to name these sessions. We're going to have a session on developing the New Black Panther Party in the agriculture industry. We got to get back to the farmland, and we're going to have our National Black Farmer Association president, Mr. Roberts from Fort Valley State University. Then, man, we're going to move on the next day, that next Saturday, we're going to wake up to doing a session called Development of Political Power. And we're going to have a sister who's been on our show many times, the National Conference of Black Mayors Executive Director, Dr. Vanessa Williams, and she's going to bring a host of people with her that we'll be naming on the website from all over the world so we can understand what Malcolm say, controlling the politics of your community and of your nation. Then we're going to move into session six, development economic infrastructure, and that's when we're going to bring in our billionaire, Brother Michael V. Roberts, our national minister of economic, Brother Michael Taylor, and so many more that you'll see on the website dealing with building us a political base, but also a financial base. Dr. King last lecture, as we talk about Black History Month, you can't talk about it without talking about Dr. King, Brother Sean. Dr. King said in his last speech from that church, I've been to the mountaintop, but go listen to it like we say over and over again on Black Talk Radio. He said, in 1967, we spent $30 billion. We're not poor. And now we can say in 2013, we spent well over $1 trillion. We are a nation within a nation. Then we got to get to that working session of seven, that session seven, handling the criminal justice system. I didn't say the criminal justice. I say handling the criminal justice system because right now, the criminal justice system is handling us hands down, and we have to turn it around, and we have to understand about judges, the bonds, the DAs, and how all this is set up, how all of the sensationalism is structured, and how they target our communities and locking our people up. We got to steal them back. And the other thing, we're going to be honest with ourselves. We got to stop doing damn crimes in our community, man. Can't blame all that on the white man. We got to put a conclusion to being miseducated and ignorant and have a new beginning, man. Stop robbing and stealing from each other and get that white man back his drugs, for this criminal justice system can be a thing of the past. Of course, the founder for the Black Lawyers for Justice will be handling that with our National Minister of Justice, Minister Akbar Blau, and Attorney Mawali Davis from the Davis and Bozeman law firms, and many others. Then we're going to have to go into the most critical session, defensive training, mobilizing the troops to defend our communities in the United States Constitution, which I got the Constitution right here. We have the right to defend our home, our land, our children, our women, our babies like everybody else. Don't be afraid. Brother Sean, one of my friends went to a state sale. You know, we have garage sales. White people have estate sales. And a little white doctor died out in a rich part of Atlanta, out in Marietta. And the man had literally, no exaggeration, over $70,000 worth of bullets and rifles and machine guns and all kind of sniper rifles and books on how to be a sniper. These dentists, these doctors, these lawyers, these judges who live out in them suburbs, awesome in their damn basements. That's why they get in their Cadillacs and their Mercedes and come into inner city and go in the courtroom every day and put felonies on us for we can't defend ourselves. And they talk about guns like they don't have anything to do with guns. And if you follow them home and go in one of them country clubs and hear them talk, they trading out guns all night long on the phone, on the internet. I'm telling you, if you would have went to the man's house to buy guns, you would have to take two U-Haul trucks. Looked harmless. Would take out a whole black community, one little doctor. So defensive training, mobilization of the troops. Don't be afraid to say that on the air. The United States give you the right. That's the best thing about this country. Paul Revere say the British is coming. That cracker was a British, running from the British. But he had the right to defend himself. Then Section 9, the NBPP building an international base. And we know we went to South Africa, as you went, Brother Sean, and Attorney Malik Zulu Shabazz, and we're going back. But we're going to have that great Dr. Leonard Jeffers, who has traveled the world internationally. I always keep Africa on our mind. We're going to have that Dr. Khaled Mansour, who owns international banks and who's all over the world. We're going to have the consulate from Haiti, Brother Gandhi Thomas, and the consulate from the Bahamas, Brother Randy Rowe, and the consulate from Bermuda. And we're going to have the ambassador of Ghana, Brother Danny Okioe, and many, many others on the international piece. We got to think global. We got to get across the tracks, brother. And I'm just excited, brother. But the number one thing I'm excited about is that Sunday, that session 10, our future leaders, brother, we got to get the young people their time to shine, and we got to let the world know that our young people ain't all running around here acting crazy. We got them all over the country, in the colleges, all over the country, in the trade schools, all over the countries, making straight A's, all over the countries, being awarded and acknowledged for their good work, for them staying in school, for them doing the right thing. Young entrepreneurs from the age of 14 all the way to 30, 35, millionaires out here, but the TV don't show them. So us, Dr. Khaled did the Million Youth March because he said somebody got to give the youth a platform. So there's no way, in the name of the Honorable Dr. Khaled Muhammad, we can have a summit of dignity and not respect. You know what I mean, Brother Sean?
That's very true.
So, brother, I just want to say to you, y'all had a great show last week. I heard Sister Nadia firing them up, and then I heard Attorney Shabazz firing them up. We got to keep these airways fired up. And the last session, we said, was a unity among the black organizations. That's 13, brother. I made a mistake. It's 11 and 12. 12 is what we're doing right now. We're going to be talking about controlling our legacy, which means our website, our social media, our radio show, Black Panther TV, the future of our radio, the future of Black Panther TV, and the future of that bad, bad black paper that you've been editing for so long. The Black Panther newspaper will be back. And the Black Panther is about to do some books, and about to do a movie, and about to do a bio. I mean, we finna roll. 2014 is our year. Let's see. So, Brother Sean, what I'll do is let you take back over and I'll go get this black man that I know our listeners is waiting for, who's been traveling the world. We're talking about our educator, our psychologist, our political science, our Pan-Africanist brother. We're talking about a brother who wrote that Psycho Academics Holocaust, Brother Umar Johnson, who is a brother at war, and who's at war, and he's really putting it down and specializing on working with the deadly forces against the black boy. And he reminds me so much of Brother Sean I would cherish forever, who wrote some of the best books, who's one of the best defenders in the psychological field for our youth. And that's another brother out of Harlem, our educator and our professor, Brother Amos Wilson.
Well, yes, sir, absolutely.
This young brother here walks in his footsteps, brother, and I'm talking about he's throughout the country. I don't know what kind of eating he's doing and what kind of vitamins he's taking, but he never sleeps. He's everywhere giving this therapy to us. He specializes in working with this scandalous and depressing America and bringing back hope and making us understand, man, like everybody, take the spotlight off the 10, the 12, the 15, even the 20% of bad, put it over there on the 80% that's doing the right thing, and consider us what we are, kings and queens and princesses, dynasty rulers. So let's go grab this brother, because I know we're waiting, and then later call from our big brother, Dr. Leonard Jeffries. So I'll go grab our big brother, and you can take over, brother.
Okay, and the number to call, family, of course, is 646-478-4447, 646-478-4447. If you will have a question for Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, who will be on with us in just a few short moments. While I have this quick second to you, I want to let you know that our national email is newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. Again, that's newblackpantherheadquarters@gmail.com. If you have an inquiry, if you need to register with the organization, you believe in black power, black nationalism, freedom, and death, that is the email to use to get your registration packet, or give us a call at our national office at 347-903-0886. Again, that's 347-903-0886. And someone will return your call right away. We are right there at that hour and are very excited to hear from our brother, and he's no stranger to the show. But, you know, this is a hard-working black man. A hard-working black man who I know his light bill and gas bill got to be low as hell, because this man is hardly ever at home. This man is always crisscrossing the country. I mean, he just left Texas, and he'd be in North Carolina. He was all in Kentucky. Then he'd be in California. Then he'd be up in Canada. He'd be all over the place. The black man is rolling. And we're happy to have such an educator and such a worker who is sincere about this mission. And I want to tell you all that. You know, Dr. Umar is picking up some haters along the way, and you all would do well to listen to what the black man is saying and learn from what the black man is saying and support what the black man is saying. We're so quick to put each other down with that slave Willie Lynch mentality, but this black man is a sincere brother out of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And he ain't laying in bed with no other men like what you saw Fresh Prince do on the movie. This black man is bringing it to you straight African. In fact, I saw he had got an event shut down because he stood up against that homosexuality that they're parading all over the place, parading it through the NFL and the NBA and all that. He stood up against that Europeanized homosexuality, and they tried to shut his event down, but he's blessed, and he's a man who was blessed by the ancestors, and we're certainly glad to have him with us tonight. And I want to make sure to tell you that you better make sure
black
you got
power.
Your pen in your pants. Black power.
Brother Sean.
Yes, sir.
I'm telling you, we got this I told the listeners before that let me just say, when I looked at this educator, this psychologist, this political scientist, our pan-Africanist brother. I was telling Brother Umar that I'm so glad he's here because I got to do a lot of work with Dr. Amos Wilson, and I've seen nobody could do it like Amos Wilson until I started studying and reading Brother Umar's books. And brother, you're not a guest, so we can't say we got a guest. We just can say we got our brother back on Black Talk Radio. Welcome.
Welcome. That's Thank you, my brother. It's an honor to be back on Black Power Radio.
Well, I'm going to just say this, brother. You know, I tell people all the time, brother, you know, this is February, and we know your DNA because I got your DNA right here. I got one book over here say Psychologist, Academics, Holocaust, and then I got this other one say Frederick Douglass say on slavery and the Civil War. So, and then I got a one on top of that say Booker T. Washington up from slavery, and across from that I got the death of Malcolm X, and across from that I got Michael V. Roberts, a billionaire, and then I got the message from Elijah Muhammad, and we got Carter G. Woodson, Miseducation of the Negro. But I tell people all the time we can read, Doctor, we can read the destruction of the African civilization, but it's
That's
nothing
right.
like, Doctor, and I'm going to be quiet, very quiet, because we got so much respect for the way you diagnose our minds. But the most respect you can have is to write your own book. That's what the ancestors want us to do. They want us to read, but they want us to get on the front line. And I end with this. You can't write a book until you go through something. And, brother, you're so young to have been through so much. And however you want to carry these airways tonight, the ancestors are with you and behind you, and Marcus Garvey Wynn behind you, brother. It's your show.
Oh, man. I appreciate it, brother. The first thing that I wanted to throw out there for your listening audience is that we have a new GED test out there. White supremacy gave us a new GED test. It's already out. Most states have it. A lot of the other states are going to be phasing it in over the next couple of months. And this is the latest weapon of mass destruction against our young people. As you know, so many of our boys, and especially our girls as well, are pushed out of high school. Some people call it a dropout rate. I call it a push-out rate because of the unfair treatment and opportunities that they get. So many of them, after they leave the school, they try to get their GED as a second opportunity to get something going for their future. So they need that GED to try to get into trade school, get a job, go to college, and into the military, although we don't support our young folks going into the U.S. military. But yet and still, they need that GED to help them out when those white public school teachers push them out. Well, now we have this new GED test, which is a lot harder than the old test, and it's more expensive to take it, and now it's totally computerized, no longer paper and pencil, and it's going to have a whole bunch of science on this new test that wasn't on the previous test. So the biggest concern that I have, and speaking with some of the administrators at a lot of our community college and historically black colleges and high schools, a lot of our people are up in arms about this new GED test because this is literally going to slam the door in the faces of a lot of young Africans in this country, and is going to pave another pipeline to the prison industrial complex. We already have the school to prison pipeline, but now we got the GED to prison pipeline, because after they get pushed out of school, try to get the GED, won't pass it, that cuts out opportunity. No opportunity leads to desperation. Desperation leads to crime, and crime leads to incarceration. So unfortunately, that was our New Year's gift from white supremacy, a new GED for our young people.
Well, I tell you this. What do you think, what has caused us to have to go to the level of even mentioning the word GED?
Lack of academic infrastructure of our own. when we go back to school desegregation and a lot of this Holocaust against our young people, whether we're talking about special education, lack of teenage employment, ADHD, psychiatric medication, what we call it, juvenile discipline schools, alternative schools, twilight schools, expulsion, suspension, low test scores. When we look at this whole spectrum of problems that our young people are suffering from, it all comes from the school desegregation movement. Now, I want to clarify, I'm not knocking Thurgood Marshall and Charles Hamilton Houston and Dr. King for what they did, because I do think it was critically important to destroy the symbols of oppression. But it's one thing to destroy the symbols of oppression, but not do much about the substance of that oppression. And when we look at the school deseg movement that began in 1954 and lasted 20 years until special ed was created in 1975, so 20 years, a whole generation of trying to force white people to let our kids sit next to theirs. Prior to school desegregation, before that, black children were achieving at high levels. One thing we have to remember, most of our inventors, were educated in segregated, underfunded, black teacher-ran public schools in the neighborhood. So when we talk about Louis Slatimer, when we talk about these different brothers, Jan Mexlinger, when we talk about Elijah McCoy, a lot of these brothers and sisters were educated not in desegregated schools. They were educated in black segregated schools in the neighborhood before school desegregation. So the question has to be asked, did school desegregation benefit or harm black children? Remember, there was no special education before school desegregation. It did not exist. They invented special education to punish, marginalize, and castrate academically the black children who would be forced to go to the white schools. We would have never had ADHD. We would have never had the learning disability. We would have never had the record-breaking suspension and expulsion rate of black males. 2 years ago, or last year, United States Department of Education came out with a report saying black boys are more suspended and expelled than anybody else in this country, even when the other children commit the same offense. So when a Chinese kid, white kid, East Indian kid, Arab kid do something wrong in school, they get a smack on the hand, a telephone call home, and after school detention. But when African children do it, they get sent home. And a lot of that has to do with the perception that white folks have about black parents. The assumption is most of our children are being raised by single mothers on welfare who do not work. And this is why I always encourage black parents to fight back against your child being constantly suspended. They don't suspend children when they know the parents are working. So what they do, because we're African, they think we're lazy and slothful, they suspend the boys because their assumption is his mother doesn't work. She's sitting home waiting for a welfare check. So whenever he acts up, we're just going to go ahead and send him home every day, all day, indefinitely. That's illegal because the school is depriving children of their proper education. But getting back to the DSEG issue, the point that I'm trying to make is that it was better to learn in an underfunded, under-resourced black school where the teachers cared about you than it is to learn in an overfunded, state-of-the-art, public, private, or charter school ran by white women with degrees from Harvard University. See, sometimes I think we pay too much attention to the physical aesthetic and ambiance of the school. A lot of black parents get hoodwinked by the ambiance. The school is beautiful. Look at all the trips they take the children on. Most of their teachers have master's degrees. They have a National Teacher of the Year working at their school. What does that matter if the teachers don't care about your children? I'm saying here and now that we have to resegregate our children. That's right. We have to resegregate our children in schools that are specifically designed to prepare them for the racist American social order, and schools that are specifically designed to equip our children with the talents and skills necessary to take back their rightful place in the international global order.
I'm 100% with you. Can you hear me, brother?
Yes, yes.
You know, I was watching you say something so profound, living here in Atlanta, and the psychological damage to the children stems from the psychological damage to the adults. When we are sitting here in 2000 and we're building, like you say, one of the greatest black leaders internationally in the world, known all over the world, almost hands down to other leader, Dr. King, and as you said so wonderfully, you come to the King Center, and the only monument that's built is of Gandhi. That's psychological damage that we pass on to our children. But if you go over to the Georgia Capitol, you got Robert E. Lee, you got every cracker who ever did anything, a monument all over the world, and you come to the King Center, and they spend the money to build it on Gandhi. And we're not against Gandhi. We're against some of his history, though. We ain't going to get crazy on this show, but I wanted to get off of that and get you back going right where you at, because I agree, because I studied Thurgood Marshall. I studied Charles Hampton Houston. I studied Separate but Equal. And then when we got to 1954, we got to the Little Sister and Brown versus the Board of Education. We fought to get where we wasn't wanted, but we forgot about something so important. Booker T. Washington was a janitor at Hampton, a black university. $300 started the institution of Tuskegee, which really, when I read, brought Marcus Garvey across the water to the United States. We have built institutions as slaves, brother. How can you, as a psychologist, make our young people understand our actions, that we have built everything from the White House to the road that lead to the White House, and now we can't even walk on the damn streets that we built, and our kids don't even know how to make a brick?
One of the biggest issues that we're dealing with now, psychologically, for African people, is complacency.
Mm.
Although we built the infrastructure of America, it was largely forced labor. And so now we're in a position where we can build the institutions we need for our community voluntarily. But the problem is we are not, we have been socialized against being naturally for ourselves. So we have a problem with doing things that are exclusively for black people. This is one of our biggest political, psychological hang-ups and contradictions. Black people are allergic to all black movements. They hear about the new Black Panther Party. They hear about Team Pan-African. Well, that sounds racist, because we're trying to do something for ourselves and by ourselves, because we know there's no other group of people on the face of the earth who could ever care about us more than we can care about ourselves. And most of them have only aligned themselves with us to exploit, to opportunistically take something away from us at the end of that struggle. We look at the civil rights movement. The Mexicans stood on the sidelines. The Latinos stood on the sidelines. The gay folks stood on the sidelines. Not that we wanted them in anyway. But when you look at all these other non-white ethnic minorities, most of them deliberately stayed away from the civil rights struggle, because they did not want to be lumped in or identified with black people. But while we were the ones out there fighting, and yeah, we had a few folks from other races who joined in, but we can't allow a few participants to automatically lead us to think that everybody who looks like them are of the same disposition towards us, because we know that's not true. We got over 1,000 years of that history to actually validate that. But we, fighting for civil rights, were still fighting for everybody, even though most of them didn't want to be bothered. And once the Civil Rights Bill of 64 was written and the Voting Rights Act of 65 was written, all these other non-white ethnic minorities came off the sidelines, stole the privileges of the rights that our ancestors fought for. Dr. King and them, they didn't fight and die and protest and get dogs and water hoses used on them for men to marry men or women to marry women. They didn't do this for Mexicans, Latinos, Koreans, East Indians. They weren't against those people, but they were primarily fighting for the forward political economic progress of people of African descent. But because that fight was not unapologetically African, it was used to the benefit of others more than it's been used to our benefit. And so now you go across America, you look at the contracts that are given out through these so-called minority business offices in the local and state government, and if you look at the breakdown, if they even have a breakdown, because a lot of them will tell you, we don't keep separate statistics on black people. We only keep statistics on minorities. So what they do is they use this word minority to lump us in with all other non-white people, which helps them escape accountability to us, the primary so-called minority. So they'll give 25% of the contracts to the Asians, 25% of the contracts to the Arabs, 25% of the contracts to the East Indians, and about 20% of the contracts to white women and gay people, and leave 5% for black folks, and call that progress. But some of that is our fault because we had no business fighting for other people. And one of the things we're going to have to do, brother, going forward, and we don't have to put this responsibility on the new Black Panther Party or the Nation of Islam or Team Pan-African or any of the other revolutionary groups out there, because they already understand that it has to be African race first. It has to be unapologetically African. It must be black power. We can no longer try to advocate for people who don't advocate for us. We have to stop giving the impression that all minorities are in the same condition. Have you seen the condition of Chinese Americans, their ownership of wealth? How can we be lumped in with them? Have we seen the forward political progress of the Latino American community? How can we be lumped in with them? Have we seen the advancement of the East Indian in America and their acquisition of businesses, Dunkin' Donuts and National Wholesale Liquidator? So how dare we lump ourselves in with people who own wealth, who are not systemically denied access to wealth, which is another big problem we have. Economic racism is probably only exceeded by educational racism as it relates to the different types of racism that are used against us. We are kept in the ghetto because we don't get access to the money, the capital necessary to finance ourselves, not out of the ghetto, because we don't need to be leaving our communities, but we need the capital to transform the ghetto into a functional versus a dysfunctional black community. I was reading an article on the airplane coming back from Europe a few weeks ago. I spoke in the Netherlands, Amsterdam, and Rotterdam. It was a Wall Street Journal article, January the 22nd. I'll never forget it. And it basically, in summary, said that the gap between the richest and the poorest people in America is getting wider. And not only in America, but in the world's richest countries. They say the gap is getting wider. There is really no more middle class. There's rich people and there's poor people. So how does this relate to the conversation? It relates because the article said the future for anyone in America, London, China, the world's most advanced country, you will only make it in these countries if you meet one of three conditions. Number one, you must be born into a family that already has wealth that can be intergenerationally transferred. So you must come from money already. Your people set you up to be comfortable. That's the first condition, intergenerational wealth. If you don't have that, then you need the second condition, and that is access to capital. This is where black people are significantly disadvantaged.
everybody in America but us has access to wealth. When the Korean comes to America, he comes with a loan from Korea, or he's easily able to qualify for a loan here in America with a new line of credit. When the Italian comes, when the European Jew comes, when the Arab comes, he comes with a line of credit from banks back home, or they easily qualify for immigrant loans here once they show up. We as African people do not have access to capital. And because we don't have access to formal capital, it's difficult for us to build the black community infrastructure that we need. That means our own hospitals, our own airlines, our own shipping industries, our own not just grade schools, but we need a whole new line of black colleges and universities. The HBCUs, we love them and they're beautiful, but many of them have gotten off the path of unapologetically African education and they've gotten into a lot of other things. So we're not dismissing them, but we're saying that we need a new concept of higher education. We need infrastructure. But you need access to capital in order to have infrastructure, and that's where we fall short. And then the white man turns to the yellow man and turns to the brown man and turns to the murky white man, and they say the reason the black man isn't making it in America is because he's lazy and is more interested in making excuses than doing something. He doesn't tell the yellow man and the brown man that the reason why the black man is not up and doing like the rest of you is because we don't give him access to capital like the rest of you have. And this is why we have to educate our children and our people so they understand black folks are not backward because we choose to be. All these other non-white people have access to capital. That means large amounts of money to build their community infrastructures, and we don't have that. So there are systematic, engineered, design strategies that keeps us in the position we in. But I'm here tonight, 2014 Black History Month, to say we can break the change that binds us if we can only come together. We can break it. We can beat white supremacy at its own game. Yes, we can. In order to do it, brothers and sisters, we have to organize. We have to organize.
Yes, sir.
Without organization, nothing gets done.
You're sounding like Brother Kwame Ture now. Organize. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Because when I listened to you, I had to put it on mute. So two ways I'm about to go, and both of them, one of them is just going to be simple to me, but it's going to be complicated and complex to this country whose evil ways have succeeded them again. But a couple of weeks ago, we had Brother Kenny Gamble on. And Brother Kenny Gamble, as you know, the legend, over 2,500 songs, him and Gamble and Huff, and the millions and millions of dollars he made dealing with the music world with everybody from Teddy Pendergraft to the OJs to the Jacksons to Patti LaBelle. But he comes back in the community, he builds schools, and his whole thing now is education. And he said he moved to the suburbs when he first got his money, but he had to come into the city every day. And then he started saying, man, look, I need to move back. So he moved back into the inner city and just started now over 13 charter schools. And I know I had called you when you were out in Texas, and I was telling you Mr. Gamble was on, and I wanted to get your opinion on, because I know you're very critical about charter schools, but how can we as an African-centered charter school get away from the shortcomings of some of the stuff I read the shortcomings that you talk about charter schools?
Right. When I deal with charter schools, I'm dealing with it from the perspective that they're still basically owned and operated by the State Department of Education. Legally, the charter school is still a public school. By law, it is an alternative public school, which means it still has to operate largely by the same governing principles of any local public school, but they're given more freedom to run their operation as they see fit in the best interest of the children. So, for example, there's a certain type of curriculum you want to use, you can use that. You want to extend your school day so that is longer than a public school's day, you can do that. You want to have a year-round school versus letting the children run free all summer long and lose all their instruction, you can do that. But you're still going to have special education. You're still going to make sure that you have to have certified public school teachers, which means you're going to have a whole bunch of white teachers running around in your school teaching black children. So the rules you still have to adhere by, and that's my issue with it. But you can innovate the process to a certain extent. For me, the charter school is a good temporary, or can be, a good temporary Band-Aid, but it is not a solution. Remember, from a nationalist, from a Pan-African nationalist position, only that which you own can ever be a solution. And in 2013, we witnessed more African-centered charter schools either be shut down or brought up to have their charters revoked by the local school districts who are responsible for supervising the local charter schools. So, for example, it is the school district that's going to come into your charter school and make sure your special ed paperwork is all right. It's the school district that's going to make you put a child in special ed, you know, who you know don't belong in there, but whose parent wants them in so they can get that extra SSI check. The district is going to make you do that. So, for me, it doesn't give me the freedom to do what needs to be done as it relates to an educational solution. But I don't see anything wrong with a brother or a sister as a short-term strategy, meaning a few years, to open up a charter school, operate that charter school, and give our children a break from the racism and miseducation that they get in a local public school. I'm not against that at all. I work at charter schools. I support charter schools. Tomorrow here in Philadelphia, I have to evaluate a couple of children at a local charter school. So I'm not against them when they're owned and not owned, but I'm not against them when they are operated by African people who have the best interests of our children at heart. I don't have a problem with that. But I want to be clear, most charter schools are not ran by us. Most charter schools are not open by us. Most charter schools are open by people who come from outside the community, and whose job is to come in and use the charter school as a tool of political empowerment and gentrification. What am I talking about? I'm saying that white people come into the black community and open up charter schools so they can hire their friends, hire their family, and then after they hire their friends and hire their family, those people naturally do what? Move into the neighborhood where the charter school is, and they bring their family with them. And by virtue of them moving into the neighborhood where the charter school is, the property value goes up. And now black people are being pushed out of their neighborhood by way of gentrification, but it was all done with the charter school as a strategy. So I don't want to confuse our brothers and sisters into thinking that Dr. Umar doesn't support a black charter school opened by black folks with good intentions as a short-term Band-Aid. I support it. But when they are opened by white folks who come into the inner city and use the charter school as a leverage pin to change the color of the community, because right now in America, these white charter schools in black neighborhoods are the number one catalyst for gentrification. The white charter school is the new face of ethnic cleansing.
Man, you rocking. I got people on the line. I got people calling phones I ain't never even had. Now we finna get deep. Now, brother, when you going all around the world and you got, I pull up and read in Oregon, some people in Oregon be keeping up with the last time I checked, wasn't but one black person out there and he was going through, he was lost, and they headlined in their paper, "The psychologist who caused homosexuality a mental illness to speak at Jefferson High School." I got to say this, brother. Obama is wrong on this issue. I cannot believe a brother from Kenya with the DNA of a Kenyan with the mile blood of a warrior, would do his State of the Union address. And he wanted to bring up a pro basketball player who say he's gay. And then today, the biggest news on TV is a college football player who's coming out saying both black males. But the next trip, and then on top of everything, international and global news, you're going to be mad at Russia because it won't accept homosexuality, and you're going to try to make that a joke by sending homosexuals to Russia, Billie Jean, whatever her name, and all of them, and then to have the audacity, your next trip, Mr. President, is going to see the Pope, and as we know, not because we got anything wrong with us, as we study, as we read the headlines, all over the United States, they have the Catholic priests lined up being sued and being handcuffed and being toted off for attacking these babies who can't defend themselves. And now some of these babies have grown up with psychological to the point where they're coming out at 30, 40, 29, talking about how they've been taken advantage of by these sick religious homosexuals. Man, I don't give a damn what nobody think about me. I am a black man standing straight up with you, brother. God made us exactly like he wanted us. He make no mistakes. If you go get a sonogram, and I got six kids, and you put that gel on that stomach, you can tell 4 months before, 3 months before, what God has decided, and it's unchangeable in my mind. You can use all the technology, all the fancy writings, all the fancy Jews' news and these Jews' rooms, as Dr. Khalid Muhammad say, but damn that, man. Why are they attacking you on an issue so clear? Because they think they got the headway. But this headway got to be stopped, bro.
It got to be stopped. And I want to clarify, too, with the audience, with the Oregon situation, because I wasn't privy to some of the articles that they were putting out about me while I was there for those 72 hours. But after, because I went straight to Europe from Oregon, I had a direct flight from Portland International to Amsterdam. So a lot of the aftermath I wasn't privy to until I got back from Europe. And so people sending me clips were in the newspaper clips, were in the newspaper clip. Two of them come to my mind. One of them was written by the lead woman, Dunga. I think she's an Asian woman, Nicole Dunga or what have you. And a brother did a little excellent documentary on her in the newspaper that she represented, which basically concluded the only reason why they attacked me is because they was trying to improve their ratings because the newspaper is about to go bankrupt and shut down. So that's part of the reason why they jumped on this, because they thought it would give them some publicity energy to sell some papers. But in her article, she says that when she asked me whether or not I had said homosexuality was a mental illness, in the article, she stated that I said I did not say that. That is not true. I never, ever backed off my position. What I told her was that I'm not interested in speaking to you on the telephone, but if you would like to interview me in person, you're more than welcome to do that, but only on the condition that you will show the complete interview, unedited, on television or either on your website. You must agree and you must sign that you will not edit. You can ask me any questions you want. You do not have to let me know what they are beforehand, but you must show the whole unedited interview. That's what I told her. But because I refused to answer any of her questions without first confirmation that she's going to give the information to the African public in an unedited format, she went to her paper and did what newspaper reporters do all the time, twist the words up, and had folks thinking that I somehow retracted on my position. Then the phone call from the brother came when it landed in the airport, because it was Nicole Dunker, the Asian, and two Negroes, a male and a female, who helped destroy and cancel Dr. Umar's opportunity to work and educate with our parents at that Portland high school. He said in his paper that I tried to convince him that I had never said homosexuality was a mental illness. I never recanted. There's no proof of that whatsoever, and I'm reading this newspaper article that was published in one of the gay newspapers. It was a gay newspaper article that said Umar Johnson tried to convince the reporter that he had never, in fact, stated that homosexuality was a mental illness. I was interviewed by our Moorish brothers in Portland at the hotel after the cancellation of the event, before I left to head for Europe, and I stated again on interview, which they played in Portland for a whole week. In fact, 2 weeks, the brother just sent me a copy of the interview. I just got it in the mail today, where I said on film again that, yes, I believe it is a mental illness for African people, that I don't care what other people want to do. I'm not interested in what white folks want to do with family and sex. I'm interested in African people, and in our culture, we believe in the complementarity of opposites, that the masculine principle is different but yet related to the feminine principle, and that our culture is based on balance between masculine and feminine. And so from an African spiritual perspective, we could never accept same-sex relationship because it is out of balance with the principle of complementarity. I then furthermore stated that anything that is out of balance with nature is abnormal, and anything that is mentally abnormal is an illness. So, yes, Dr. Umar Johnson believes that homosexuality and lesbianism is an illness for African people. And this is the exact same thing I wanted to say had they interviewed me, and I gave him the same opportunity that I gave Nicole Duncan. I am willing to be interviewed by you if you will sign on paper stating that you are going to play the full interview on radio, internet, or television, and that you will not edit it. If you do that, you can ask me anything you want, anything. I do not need benefit of the questions beforehand. And he would not agree to that. Nicole Duncan would not agree to that. I received about 20 other requests. I probably was the most popular man in Oregon for that weekend. The radios was coming at me. The newspapers was coming at me. Internet was coming at me. Folks was following us. I would walk into restaurants, and white folks like, wait a minute, you're famous. I just saw you on the news. I mean, I literally, they made this thing a regional top story, but none of the reporters was willing to give Dr. Umar an interview on the condition that they would play the entire interview, my full answer, not cutting and pasting and splicing, but play the full answer for the Oregon public, and you could interview me all day long. They had people thinking that I was running away from the reporters. I wasn't running away. I simply wanted y'all to admit that you would be willing to play it verbatim, unedited, and none of them white crackers was willing to do that, and that's why I did not submit to the interview.
Brother, look, I say this with God on our side. This thing is out of control, and what's crazy about it, these Greeks and these freaks and these Romans who brought this into existence, it damn sure didn't come from Africa. They're out of their mind to think that brothers like me and you and brothers who have read this message to the black man are going to stand by and let them mess with our sons and our nephews and mess our culture up. We had a brother who damn near helped Obama get into the White House single-handedly on CNN, Brother Roland Martin. And the next time Obama got ready to run, they needed to get rid of Brother Roland Martin because he was a voice for Obama. And they used some homosexuality statement and fired the man off of CNN. We have to, and what's so funny, brother, the homosexuals out here want to attack everybody, but nobody can say a damn thing about them. The hell with them, man. I don't back down from it. I'll die standing up for a man is a man and a woman is a woman. No controversy, no debate. Shut the hell up and get back in God's lineup. Ask God to forgive you for being foolish, and half of them just doing it because it's the thing in right now. And the hell you going to have a civilization while you got to manufacture babies in labs. This ain't Germany. We ain't Hitler. Black people ain't going to go along with this. And these damn preachers in these churches need to wake up. These pulpits need to wake up. These schools need to wake up. Black parents need to wake up and stop letting your kids come home and you know your son ain't got no damn business with no lipstick and no pumps in his closet. You know your daughter ain't got no damn business with no mustache and no wraps to put around her breast to cover up her beautiful breast that's made to feed the babies. This is undebatable with me, man. I don't give a damn how many line up against me, brother. Right is right, and I'm glad you're a psychologist to break it down in a more sophisticated way. And, brother, we support you 100%. Somebody got to stand up and say, hell no.
That's right. And this whole homosexual thing, the legalization and normalization of it began in the 70s. This is when this started. 1973, the American Psychiatric Association, at their annual convention, voted to remove homosexuality out of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, second edition, sixth printing. They voted in 73. In April of 1974, a few months before I was born, the sixth printing of the DSM-II was released in America. For the first time in April of 1974, and I want the listeners to hear me, April of 1974, I'll say it one more time, April of 1974, for the first time in American history, having sex with or being sexually attracted to someone of the same gender was considered normal. That is also the same time that the first documented cases of HIV/AIDS surfaced. This is all related because the U.S. Army Bioweapons Lab in Fort Detrick, Maryland, who manufactured the AIDS vaccination, would then take that vaccination and spread it amongst the homosexual population after they legalized it, hoping that the black homosexuals would then inject our sisters. And so now today, as we sit here in 2014, AIDS is the number one killer of black women between the ages of 38 and 58 globally. How does a disease that originally was presented and propagated as a disease of gay white men, how does it become the number one killer of middle-aged heterosexual black females? All of this is population control. As I heard a black doctor from Temple University say, that one of the biggest causes of new AIDS cases in African-American women is down-low homosexual black males who are infecting our sisters with this virus. Homosexuality is population control, black family. It's population control. Do you think it's a coincidence that the United States government is going around the world trying to get countries to put a cap on how many babies somebody can have, and at the same time making the world safe for homosexuality? Those two agendas are related. Population control and homosexuality are related because they are one and the same thing. A man can't have a baby with a man. A woman can't have a baby with a woman. And that's why they're spreading this negative energy to our children. Our kids are learning about homosexuality before they even hear about heterosexuality. Think about that for a minute. Your son or your daughter is going to learn about same-sex marriage before they learn about traditional sex marriage. This is the design of the homosexual propagation plan, to convince black kids to live a life of homosexuality so they don't have children. White folks could care less whether or not black gay people got rights. They don't care about no black people, heterosexual or homosexual.
That's right.
But if they can convince you, if they can convince you to live your life in this sexually bastardized manner, then you're only playing into their hand because you are reducing our numbers. Every time you see a gay black couple, you are seeing a couple who has volunteered not to produce their people.
Black power. Brother, look, right here in Georgia, we had a brother, famous actor named Roland Howard. We got our first black detective, and he was on Heat of the Night, and it was rolling every night right down here in South Georgia. And all of a sudden, they caught him going through the city cross-dressing. And then he eventually died of AIDS. You can't tell me you're not right that it's a sickness. A black man, black, strong as Roland Howard, playing the role of the lead detective on the number one show in the world, and at 8 o'clock at night, he's putting on dresses and pumps, walking through the city now, he's dead of AIDS, and people got to understand how serious this is. This is serious, man. This is got to be an illness, and they got to let you teach, and they got to let us get focused, because we have one purpose when we're born on this earth, and that's to do right for the next generation. We cannot let the next generation, Brother Umar, come into this existence confused as hell like this. Hell no. I don't give a damn what President Obama say. And soon I get off of probation, I'll go to the White House and tell him to his face to cut this shit out, man.
It's a sad thing, my brother. It's a sad thing. And that's why we got to have our own schools, brother, because...
Brother Sean, you better get to the table, brother. We got about 5,000 people on the phone want to talk to you. Brother Sean, if me and Brother Umar go any longer, I'm not going to get assassinated by the homosexual. I'm going to get assassinated by some of these strong revolutionaries who want to ask brother some questions. Brother, let's let you take some questions because
sure. We
got to go off
sure. The
air because this is too deep. Brother Sean, I'm going to turn your show back over to you.
It's too late now. We're cooking. We're rolling. Hey, Black Power, Brother Umar, Sean Saddam. Well, we'll take the phone calls right now. It's a code 504-432-504-432. You're on live, Black Power Radio. Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson and National Chairman Mr. Hashim Adinga. Go for it, Black Power. Question.
Black Power. I'm going to ask two quick questions. Do you think that the black bourgeoisie is the downfall of the black community? And how do you get black folks to come together and educate the children? How do you do that?
Okay, number one, dealing with the black bourgeoisie. Without question, white supremacy is our number one enemy. And the black bourgeoisie is one of its best weapons because these are a certain class of blacks who they have educated, financed, and put in key positions to deflect responsibilities for our condition from the social order itself. Before you break into somebody's house, you have to deal with a guard dog. And the black bourgeoisie is the guard dog of white supremacy. You can't even get to the white man. You're going to have to fight 20 black folks before you get to the white man because their job is to protect them. Politicians, preachers, rich blacks, those in entertainment, those in status positions, their job is to protect the system. Just like an old-fashioned house Negro would do, protect the system. And what makes them so dangerous, because white supremacy knows how to choose a leader, what makes them so dangerous is that these are people who our people naturally would look up to. They're charismatic, good energy. Look at Reverend Jesse Jackson. Good speaker. He's a preacher, has a civil rights background. He's an excellent choice to be a black bourgeoisie. Look at Al Sharpton. Good voice, okay, very articulate, preacher background, connections to Jane Brown. You need people who are credible amongst their own. You will never get members of the black bourgeoisie who we would not accept. White folks have been studying us too long. They used to own us. They know what we look for in a leader. So they strategically choose people who they know you would follow. President Obama. African ancestry, Harvard degree, light skin, straight hair. Cory Booker out of Newark, New Jersey, who many are saying might one day end up being the first president who is a descendant of enslaved Africans. Okay? So they choose different features, and it ain't just our light-skinned brothers and sisters. They choose dark-skinned brothers and sisters. Look at Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. He's blue-black purple. But guess what? He came up through affirmative action, did some things in the community, and even though he did not meet with the same type of reception as some of the others, ultimately his approval within the African-American community improved.
And because these people can blend in with us, because these people can blend in with us, it makes it hard for us to identify them, and many of us don't like to expose them because we got personal relationships with them. Let me be clear about this bourgeoisie thing. We protect them from being exposed. We do it. White supremacy doesn't protect them. White supremacy finances them and says, look, I'm putting you out here so you can protect this social order. And as long as you can do that, you keep your job. The minute you're no longer effective, we will trade you in for somebody else. So white supremacy ain't protecting you once you're out there. It's your job to swim. But they'll give you everything you need. They'll give you TV. They'll give you newspaper. They'll give you money. They'll give you not-for-profit organization. They'll give you some grants. But they're not going to protect you from black folks because they can't. It's your job to stay alive amongst your people. But the minute you begin to you lose respect and the admiration, they drop you off and they find somebody else. See, Jesse Jackson Jr. would have never went to jail if his father was still needed by white supremacy. If Jesse was still the Negro of choice, Junior would have never went to jail. Junior went to jail for two reasons. Number one, daddy is no longer needed. They threw Jesse back. They used Jesse Jackson for so many things over all these years and then got rid of him. And the reason Junior is in jail now ain't because he spent no campaign finance money. That is not why he's in jail. White folks spend their campaign money all the time. Everybody knows that. I'm a political science major. We know that. They spend that money. That ain't nothing new. He went to jail because there's folks in Chicago who wanted Jesse Jackson Jr. to run for mayor of Chicago. Now, whether he would have been a good one or not, I have my doubts about that, but that ain't the point. Chicago is the only predominantly black U.S. senatorial district in the United States of America. You can only be a U.S. senator if you go through Chicago. So if you can win the U.S. Senate race, you can best believe you can win the city's mayor race. And so Rahm Emanuel, and I believe Obama was in on it as well, set him up to be blackballed, or should we say whiteballed, to keep him out of the reelection race in Chicago. They did the same thing to Kwame Kilpatrick. Kwame Kilpatrick didn't go to jail because he lied about sleeping with his assistant. He went to jail because they needed to keep him out of the political scene long enough for them to take the power back from black folks. That's why when black politicians go to jail, if you notice, they stay in jail long enough for the election to come and go. They gave Kilpatrick over 20 years, so by the time Kwame gets out of jail, he'll be so old and irrelevant that nobody would vote for him again anyway. This is what they do, you see. But see, Kwame actually was a grassroots brother, which means he needed to keep his nose a little bit cleaner than what he did, because from what I saw, he was trying to do some things for the people. He made some mistakes, but we all do because we're human. But he was trying to walk that straight line. But getting back to your question, the whole purpose of the bourgeoisie is to deflect responsibility from the system. As long as you can do that, you can keep your job. When you're no longer able to do that, they replace you. And that's why when Obama is out of office, they're going to use him for a few more things. He's going to get more life, just like Jesse. And then they'll find the next Negro in charge. This is what they do. But we must keep in mind that we are never our worst problem. White supremacy is. But we are white supremacy's greatest accomplice to our own extermination and oppression. Getting black parents to support my school, I don't think it's going to be difficult. If there's one thing that most black people can agree on in this country, that our children are being miseducated, that is universal. I rarely find black folks who will argue against that. And because of that, and because of the extent of the oppression of black boys, the murders, the unemployment, the jail, the dropout, the test scores, I really do think that once my lawyers get this paperwork ready and I'm ready to start this national fundraiser, I'm really looking forward to black folks really getting behind me financially to build these schools.
Okay. Well, brother, you're doing a good job. I like what you're doing, Brother Umar.
Thank you. Always good to hear from you, too, man.
All right, brother.
All right, Black Power, appreciate it. Next caller, your area code is 904-291. You're on live with Black Power Radio. Dr. Umar Abdullah Johnson, New Black Panther Party. Your question, your comment, please. Welcome, Black Power.
I had a question. I was going to ask Umar Johnson, where do you see the black youth going in the next 10 years?
To jail if we don't radically alter our community priorities and start building infrastructure for our youth. Black teenagers have the worst time of finding a job in this country. Most businesses would rather hire an illegal immigrant child who doesn't even speak English before they hire a child of African descent. Our children are catching hell all over this country, and it becomes the responsibility of the adults in the community to reorient our priorities, begin building the necessary infrastructure to give them the training that they need and to give them the opportunities that they need. See, people are always talking about how do we get the attention of the youth. It's real simple. Opportunity. If Dr. Umar, if Chairman Nzinga, if we stood outside with a sign that said we have 5,000 jobs for anybody 17 to 21, $10 an hour jobs, you would have 5,000 young black males out there in 5 minutes. You won't have to do no radio ad or nothing. You know why? You're providing opportunity. And I think one of the things that the conscious community, collectively speaking, all of us, regardless of political ideology, Pan-African nationalists, black nationalists, socialists, guys in earth, the Wapi and Hebrew Moor, it does not matter. We have to look at the fact that we are not providing enough opportunities for our young people in order for us to really organize and mobilize them. A hungry man is first and foremost loyal to his stomach. Our youth are first and foremost loyal to their immediate needs, as they should be. But as you give them opportunity, do you know how powerful it would be to say to a brother, look, that school is mistreating you. Give me your mother's phone number. Sister, I want your son to come to my school. I have an independent school or a charter school, and I want him to come here instead of being in that school because it's not right. Go to the school. Let them know you're transferring him over to the Frederick Douglass Marcus Garvey Academy. Do you know how powerful that is? To run up to a brother who's on the street selling bootleg DVDs and say, look, brother, I know you're doing this to make a hustle, but if the police catch you selling the latest Denzel or the latest Tyler Perry or the latest movie from Hollywood, brother, they will put you in jail. You could get at a minimum of 5 years being caught shuffling those bootleg DVDs. So guess what, brother? I got a job for you right now. Right now. Come fill this paperwork out, $10 an hour. I'm going to train you, and I'm going to pay you as you learn. You know how powerful that is? Doing that breathes hope back into our young people. But the problem with the conscious community, so many cliques and camps are busy fighting with each other, trying to outperform and outdo each other, that we don't get anything done. And so we got to understand that that intellectual masturbation is eroding the confidence that our people have in us. Said another way, we have become a religion. Black consciousness is just like the church, where you walk in and people judge you and criticize you and ridicule you and try to find everything wrong with you and then tell you you ain't conscious enough to be with us. That's what the church does. So now we have conscious church. And so now the people don't want to go to church and they don't want to go to the conscious community because both of them are elitist cliques that are operated on superficial ideological affiliations. Not purely looking out for black folks, because that's what we're supposed to do. You have to first be aligned with my political ideology in order for me to work with you. That day is over with, y'all. We got to rise beyond that. I don't care if a brother is a Nawapian, God of Nerve, Hebrew, Moor, socialist. He could be an integrationist. If the brother is sincere, I'm going to work with him. I'm going to work with him. And so we got to wait beyond the ideology, not give them up, because we all love what we stand for. I'm never going to give up my Garveyism. But at the same time, my Garveyism not blind me to the fact that everybody has something to contribute.